Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. It's Doug here. I'm doing these intros in the beginning these days. And, you know, really the main reason is I got to put some ads in the front and I didn't record them at the time that I did the recording. When you cut through all the bullshit, like that's what we're doing here, it does give you the option to like fast forward through this part. But I'm trying to tell you fun stories from my life or just things I want to talk about. And I have at least two things to share with you in addition to one of the ads, which it helps support the show and keep the lights on. And there's equipment and hosting and there's other bullshit to make this stuff happen. We try to make it transparent, but you know, me talking about it sure doesn't make it very transparent. So let's just move directly into it. Last week in the intro portion, or Doug story time as we're going to now call it, talked about being in Estes Park and enjoying my time there. Well, a good friend of mine now is letting some friends use a house occasionally in a location. And I actually recorded an episode there, and I'm being vague because, you know, I want to protect the privacy of folks, and I appreciate, you know, people sharing the nice things they have, including like a house. So this house was in the Breckenridge area, and I'm making sure I'm not saying anything too much, but you know, Carl and I stayed there one time when we were working on the book, The Lazy Book, and I was up there again, and it was absolutely just beautiful. Breckenridge is a cool town. Now, I'm not a skier, but there's other stuff to do there. Of course, there's the downhill skiing, but there's also cross-country Nordic skiing around there. And there's just trails. So you can go snowshoeing or hiking. And while there is a ton of snow, you know, several feet of snow in certain places and just piles of snow as they plow it out of the road and all that stuff, the trails are often just packed snow. So if you're from a land that's warmer, you may not know, just packed snow. You can just walk with like hiking boots or whatever. I often wear like micro spikes. So there's some metal teeth that you could put on the bottom of your shoes essentially. And it gives you a little more grip and just a little bit more steadiness overall if you're walking on something slick like packed snow. Now, there are some other spots where it's very thick, it's very powdery, and if you tried to step in with no snowshoes, then you would basically be up to your knees or waist or whatever. Like you're very deep in the snow and it's quite hard to move around. So you have snowshoes where maybe you only go in maybe like 5 or 6 inches or so, or less, depends on the snow and how big your snowshoes are and the surface area and your weight and all this stuff. But super awesome up there. And I really enjoyed the time in Breckenridge. I invited just a couple friends to hang out, and it was extremely cold. It was like, say, negative 10 Fahrenheit to about 10 Fahrenheit most of the time we were there. However, even though that sounds dramatically fucking freezing, when it's sunny and it's not too windy, it doesn't feel that bad if you dress warmly. So you can't go out in shorts and a t-shirt. You know, there's always some joker, even in like super cold weather, and they're wearing shorts or something like that. It's cold enough in Breckenridge in the middle of the winter where there's no assholes out there in shorts walking around. It's just, it's too cold. Maybe there's one or two, but you know, I didn't see him. So anyway, Breckenridge was awesome. It's actually a little bit higher there. I want to say we were at about 9,000 feet. And when I was in Estes Park a few weeks before that, it's only about 7,500 or so, depending on where you are in town. Breckenridge is fairly high, and you're kind of, you know, you're up on a mountain, and it is a little, I mean, it's tough to sleep up there. Most people don't sleep well the first couple days. I'm lucky so far, I've never had sort of true altitude sickness. If you do have that, like the best thing you could do is like head back down to a lower spot. Otherwise, like stay really hydrated. I think there are some medicines that can help you deal with the elevation. And some people get like pretty severe headaches and migraines, and they're somewhat debilitated and really can't do anything, just feel really sick. But luckily, I don't have that. I just kind of sleep poorly generally in those kind of environments. So a little bit tough, but you know, you get used to it after a couple of days. And a pro tip is not to drink alcohol, though I did not follow that warning. Second story for you here is economy is coming up. Now, Diana, she sold out the tickets months ago. Absolutely amazing. Really fun event. I love it. I've been the last few years. I will be there. And I would love it if you came and chatted with me. I think in the previous episode or sometime recently, I said, hey, come up and talk to me. I may look like I don't want you to talk to me, but I do. I probably look grouchy or something like that. But I'm actually friendly. If you come up and chat with me, that'll be awesome. One great thing you can do for me, you tell a lot of stories. Now, I'll ask you questions, but I tend to lose my voice at these events. And it's just, I try to talk too much and I try to yell because it's loud everywhere. And you know, I just won't say too many things. I'll ask you questions. Tell me some stories. I'm a great listener. The other thing is I'll have these fine stickers. Before Carl quit the show, I got a bunch of stickers made. And for the YouTube folk, I am holding them up. And this one says, I'd say in any given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real actual work. And then it's a picture of Carl and I. That's a quote from Office Space, one of my favorite movies. This other one says, it's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care. So I think I have a couple other quotes from Office Space, but I'll have these fine stickers here and some others as well that I'll be happy to pass out. Now, I do want to mention Ghostbed sponsor, and I think I have a live read in the episode. So you'll hear that in there. Please support them. They're great. And they've been, working with us for the last couple years here. Also, Mint Mobile, I switched a couple years ago. I'm not going to do a super long read here, but basically, I was paying about $1,440 per year for my wife and myself. And now I'm only paying about $360 per year for both of us. That's a savings of about $1,080. The service is exactly the same as far as I could tell. We don't have any issues with service, and it's been a great move overall. I'm a little sad that I didn't move years ago, but if you're still on one of the big cell phone company plans, I encourage you to check it out. You could test it out. You could support Mile High Fi, and you can go to milehighfi.com/mint. Let's go to the show now. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and I have a very special guest host today, Kristen Knapp. How are you?
I am excellent. It's so exciting to actually be here in person with you.
And yeah, for the people that are only listening, Kristen is here in Longmont in the studio. We're sitting right next to each other, and I can't believe you're here. We've talked about it for so long. Like, what's your first few impressions from just being here like 12 hours?
Oh, wow. I haven't done a whole lot yet. But I mean, the beauty of the place is pretty awesome. Just driving up to your house, you know, and the snow-capped mountains in the distance, it's a nice sunny day. It's just gorgeous. Beats the Midwest.
Yeah, it's very nice. A little chilly this morning. It's one of our cooler days, but it does, I mean, it was like in the teens Fahrenheit. So are you used to such cold weather?
We have some pretty good cold in the St. Louis area, but here's what I like about here. Or at least today. Yeah, it's cold, but it's full on sunshine and it's not windy. So it actually doesn't feel bad out there.
It's not too bad. So today, it's part of the kind of series that I think we're now doing on like Coast Fi and case studies and people that are more advanced on the sort of journey of Fi. And we're talking to Susie today. And Susie lives like roughly in the area, so she's in the studio too. So a quite exciting day for me here. And I'm going to kick it over to Kristen for a nice intro.
Okay, well, we want you to meet Susie. She's a Colorado native and a proud Coast Fi enthusiast, navigating life with her husband and two young kids in the Denver area. With a background as a nurse and Air Force veteran, she's balanced a career in healthcare with multiple sabbaticals, international adventures, and a passion for world schooling. Susie is embracing a lifestyle centered on family, meaningful work, and helping others achieve financial freedom. Welcome, Susie.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And you reached out to me with a nice email, outlined a lot of stuff that we could talk about, and we're not going to be able to cover it all because there's so much cool stuff. But we'll just jump right in. Like, when did you discover the concept of FIRE or financial independence and really starting to be like intentional about how you're saving or spending money?
Yeah, good question. So maybe to take it back one step before that, I grew up in Northern Colorado to very pretty frugal parents who valued a lot of things like travel and time together. We always had what we needed. And so I think that instilled that frugality early on, was focusing on like, you know, travel. We spent a month or two traveling. We would always have exchange students staying with us. So I developed that travel bug pretty early. And then they were helped me get some scholarships for college. So basically got paid to go to college, had a job after. That was through RTC, but I lived in California, making good money, saving a lot of it because of being able to get housing allowance. And I loved roommates and being with friends. So, and then I was stationed overseas and was able to travel a lot while having that income. And that really, I was like, I need to spend a little bit more time traveling. I also had worked as a nurse in oncology. So I saw people getting sick and ill and how that can affect people. In my early 20s, I saw that. So it really instilled this like sense that there's a balance to be struck between working and playing. So it was pretty easy for me to take some time off after that time frame. And then I got a master's in Denver and then started, you know, getting settled into like a little bit more of a civilian career and was able to, let's see, we got met my husband in 2012. We got married in 2016. And the first time we tracked our finances was like 2 months after that in 2016. And we, like the next year, we're looking at maybe getting a bigger home. And so I kind of dove deep into our finances and like, what's our situation? Reached out on Nextdoor to find like a financial advisor and kind of got sucked into the whole life insurance, let's just say.
Oh, so boy.
I call that our about $6,000 stupid tax because we paid that and met with him, you know, at his house. And I was like, this is a nice house. I'm like, I am paying for a portion of this because of my whole life insurance fees. So then I found Mr. Money Mustache and a lot of different things online and just did this deep dive. I would say that, you know, my first son born in 2017 also prompted that. I was like, oh, it's not just me anymore that, or my husband that we have to be financially responsible for. So I would say this is all a process, but around like 2018, 2019, we really like, I was like, like 2018, we ramped up our investments and all that and started really tracking things more closely. I've been tracking our spending since like 2018, like pretty much every dollar, you know, has its pros and cons to have that level of numbers to look at. But so then we started tracking, you know, had a second kid in 2019. And it's just been amazing. I think the number one thing people can do when it comes to finances is just track where they're at and then have those like weekly or, you know, it's not always weekly now because we're busy, but weekly, monthly money chats, especially if there's a partner involved, it's just like so important to sit down, talk to each other about where we're at, what our goals are, making a list of priorities, things that we value and being on the same page, which, you know, we're all different people. There's four people I'm, you know, kind of responsible for in my family. So sometimes we have different opinions, but working through that is like so valuable. And I feel really, you know, lucky to have a partner on this plan, on this Coastify journey. So then, you know, the pandemic hit. I was working in healthcare. I was working as a health educator at the schools, which basically shut down. And so I moved over to a clinic and just working like Monday through Friday where people are responsible. Like if my child was sick or I was sick, you know, they would have to reschedule patients. And I just like, I need some more flexibility. I want to live kind of on my own terms. I just feel like I am responsible for little humans and that is kind of tiring at times. So being responsible at a work is also kind of stressful. So I'd say in March of 2022, I asked to go intermittent, which basically I left that like full-time job and I became intermittent, which means I kind of was like, they're like, hey, could you work here and cover? And I would say yes or no. I was able to take that entire summer off. We did about 8 weeks in Canada road trip. My husband has been working remotely since the pandemic and then switched to a new job in 2021 that, I mean, he's never even met his boss. They have people all over the world. So it's always been pretty easy for him to work on the go. So we're very lucky for that combination, of course. So
I'll jump in.
Yes.
I'll jump in really quick. So was your husband on board right away with this?
I would say so, yes. So my husband grew up in Germany, and he was an exchange student in Colorado in high school. Kind of long story short, his host father had been divorced. His mom was divorced. She came over from Germany, hit it off with his host, American host father. They got married. That was like 20 plus years ago. So then he stayed in the U.S., went to CU Boulder, and he just loves Colorado, the mountains, the skiing. So he has, you know, somewhat of a very different mindset. I mean, growing up in Germany, you have a lot of like protections, a lot of like, I mean, people don't really retire early because it's really common to just work till retirement age, but they also have a much stronger work-life balance, you could say. I mean, 35, 40 days of vacation is built in, long maternity leaves. You don't really have to stress around, you know, if you lose your job or things like that. So I think it's a little different mindset because he always felt like something will work out. He's very optimistic. He has that more like abundance. Like there's always going to be something that I can do. So whereas I a little more scarcity, like growing up with like frugal parents and I'm like, I don't know, are we secure enough, you know? And so I think that's a good balance. He kind of helps me stay more present. I'm a little more future oriented. So I'd say early on, I was like, let's save. And he was like a little like slower to adjust, but he's always, I think it's a good combo. He definitely is like on board now. He loves the stuff we've been able to do in the last few years, traveling, spending a year in Spain, different things like that. He's totally on board. He's not the first to plan it, but actually like that because I'm the planner. So it kind of just works out. I can tell when he's had like a rough day at work. He's like, so when can we like totally retire?
What's our date?
I was like, did you have a rough day at work? But I mean, to be honest, his remote schedule is such, it's worked out really well, like I said.
Well, and, when you said he changed his jobs, like what brought that on? What's that about?
He was at a company that was like, you know, pre-COVID, like no work from home, no. And then of course, everyone switched to work from home in 2020. But it was like in tech, but I think he was like recruited somewhat. I mean, there's a big tech push like 2021 timeframe. And he's like, was the 12th employee at this company and they've been doing really well. So things have just progressed. So I think there's a little bit of a luck, a little bit of him getting a couple years of tech experience and reaching out on LinkedIn. He's like a hard worker. He really likes to help support, you know, the company he's working for, but also he's like really good at just striking a balance. But having a remote, at least one parent work remote is so helpful. Like kids are sick, you know, they can kind of watch TV for a couple hours while he's working. He's pretty flexible in that regard. Every once in a while, there's like evening or weekend stuff, but it's pretty minor. So I know there's been kind of that return to office push for a lot of companies. And again, this is a remote first company, so they'll never have that. Like he has coworkers in all different countries. So it's really, really interesting. And so I just think, you know, I know those opportunities may not be as plentiful there's a lot of people who really like remote work. So we're very lucky in that regard to have at least one parent work remote. And then I've been able to be really flexible with work, basically telling my, you know, I'd like to be intermittent. And then I stayed on the books while we were in Spain for a full year, which was pretty amazing, and came right back and worked this fall. And just 2 weeks ago, I said, well, we're going back to Spain for the spring semester. And she's like, great, just reach out next summer. And I'm sure there'll be work because, you know, in healthcare, there's always work. So, and then I'm also Air Force reservist. So I work like switched to a new position, thankfully, but I work like 4 weeks a year in Florida. So I did that this fall. And that allows us to have really affordable healthcare without really needing to work like a set schedule. So we've kind of combined, you know, I think this is the great thing about when you have a partner is you can kind of combine like, okay, he has the like tech job, definitely helps fund most of our lifestyle. I can provide affordable healthcare, some flexibility because, you know, someone's got to be there if they're sick or things like that. And I get to go on like field trips at school like this Thursday. I just said, I can't work Thursday, I'll work Friday. And I get to go on a field trip all day Thursday with my oldest son. So it's just so nice to have that flexibility. And I mean, really this started in like 2018 when we're like, let's invest as much as we can. For a couple of years, we were investing. I had a 457 I was maxing and my TSP. And then my husband had a 401k But then with that new company, he didn't till just actually like 3 months ago. So now he's at least getting the match. And I've been able to drop back over the last 2 years. But there's I still always want to do the Roth IRA. Maybe we can talk investing stuff at some point. But that's my like goal is like, okay, we're going to like cut back a lot. But I still have these like, you know, don't want to totally switch to Coastfi. I don't know if you've experienced this, like that mental shift of like, I was saving for a lot of years to like not has been, I would say, a work in progress for me.
I'm not struggling with that. I'm good.
That's awesome.
Here's what I want to know. You mentioned the whole life insurance thing. Mm-hmm. Were there other money mistakes? Or let's talk about that money mistake and how that sort of shifted any perspective. Mm-hmm. Give us the dirty details.
So we paid for whole life insurance. And I kind of knew that, I don't know if this is a great idea. And that financial advisor switched my husband's like Roth IRA to some Brighthouse Shield that he finally, you know, it's been 6 years, so he was able to get it back over to just like, so he can manage it more. But it really made me say like, wow, there's a lot. And I will backtrack. I'm very lucky. My dad was like, okay, you need to invest in your Roth IRA. So all my 20s, I was at least investing some, but I honestly didn't know what it was in. I was just throwing it in there. It was that time of year to put some money in. And so very lucky to have had that even before I had the foresight to really jump in. But there's so many podcasts, so many different books. It's so easy in some ways. I mean, it takes some time to really learn what's important and learn the basics, and it's not as confusing. You know, of course, there's all different paths, and I'm sure we could have done things differently or better. The other money, you know, mistake that I'd look back on is I was actually deployed in 2008. This is like a lot of pre-internet shopping. So I was spending maybe $200 a month, not even while I was deployed. And that was, of course, bought on the market. I wasn't even actually enrolled in the thrift savings plan because this is when the military did not automatically enroll people. And I was like, I'm only doing 4 years. I don't need to worry about that. And then, of course, here I am still in. But I could have probably been easily maxing out, especially a Roth, because if they even had it then, you know, because I was already in a tax-free work location. So I could have probably had a lot of money in at the bottom of the market.
So these mistakes were before you like found Mr. Money Mustache and started going down all the rabbit holes.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say the mistake once we learned everything was kind of being okay with the whole life insurance. But in the grand scheme, you know, $6,000 stupid tax is pretty minor.
Yeah. And I had one and I put in like 30K or something like that over a long time.
I remember you've talked about this. Uh-huh.
And it was actually like I knew it was around, and luckily I had passed the threshold where it was actually earning some money, but the returns were horrible. I roughly broke even. But Amberly and I recorded something, and she was like, okay, just close it, like talk to him, close it. So I got out of there.
Count your losses. And
did you guys just stop paying? And it was like,
The next year I reach out to that financial advisor. I was like, we're going to cancel this. He's like, oh, we should get together and talk about this, you know? And I think I got back like maybe $150 of a $3,000 life insurance. And I kept the like term component of it. And then I've added on more term. My thought around like term life insurance is like, I'm happy to pay. Maybe, you know, people say like, you just need enough to replace like, you know, a couple years of income. But I figure I'm like, if the worst case happens, I want it to be like, at least there's this, you know?
Right.
So I would rather never see a dime of that. But I feel like, and I mean, now even this has been 5 years since we started, I feel like we could get more, but I don't know. It's okay. But term is the way to go.
Yep. Now, you coined, I think, some term called FIRO, F-I-R-O. Oh. Did you make this up?
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of different acronyms in the FI community.
What's it mean?
So, financial independence, retire often.
Retire often.
Uh-huh.
Which, not optional. Is it often or optional?
I would say I like the idea of retire often
retire
in terms of,
often. Okay.
Of taking those sabbaticals, taking that time off. After I left the active duty, I took about 10 months where I traveled. And then after I finished my master's, my husband and I spent about 6 months traveling. And then, you know, since then, I've certainly taken some time off. We spent last school year in Spain where I wasn't working. And then we did that month in Canada. So it's more of like a retire, which, you know, the word retire, I try not to get too hung up on. I know there's a lot of conversation around, well, if you're making any money, are you really retired? But, and I feel lucky that I've never really been in this like corporate world where it's like, you're either grinding away or you're totally not doing anything. Healthcare has offered me a lot of opportunities to be part-time and have some flexibility. You know, I worked through grad school as like 2 days a week, you know, but then was able to still do grad school. Right now I work like 3 days a week, but I just go in, kind of clock in when I'm there, leave when I want, because the intermittent just offers a lot of flexibility. So I feel very lucky to not have had to like really go from like one extreme to the other. But I see that in a lot of career fields. Like my husband probably could not go to his boss and say I'd like to be part-time. Like right. It would be just not really a thing. So that's where like I feel like they retire often, like being able to take time off, or you know, being remote is kind of another use of that R, you know, being able to be remote and just flexible in that regard is really, really helpful.
I feel like these big breaks and sabbaticals are a little bit more common in our community, the FI community. Outside of it, not so much. So I'm curious as to what encouraged you or gave you the confidence to take that first big one. What inspired that?
So the cool thing about working over in Germany and being with a lot of people like-minded who were making pretty good income, had somehow been drawn to military, people from all different backgrounds. We did a lot of traveling while we were in Germany, so a lot of people would get the travel bug, and then they would separate, because most people don't make a career out of the military, so they would separate, and almost everyone took a big chunk of time off, because you're already far from like where you're going to land back in the U.S. or something, and you had probably worked a lot. Like I worked very long days. I was always on call. There was always something going on. We worked exercises for like 3 weeks straight and different crazy things. So it was like people really, you know, took that time off. And then, like I said, working in healthcare, where I would see young people with debilitating illnesses or working oncology back in California, you know, I just like always knew that there was things to be done now and not just later. And I think that was helpful to have a little bit like of a frugal mindset. So it wasn't even like, oh, do I have the money for this? Because I always kind of did. Again, I wasn't investing a ton. So it was just sitting in my savings. But then it was like, oh, I can go off for 6 months because I have this income. And I also just knew that it would be pretty easy to get a job again in healthcare. I recently actually talked to a position and they're like, I mean, I haven't even worked inpatient nursing in a long time. And they're like, sure, we'll take you. So, you know, being in a career field where I always feel like I could get some type of income doesn't make me feel like I can't take that time off. And I think it is pretty common. There's travel nurses that will work 3 months and then take 3 months off. And so,
but do they have kids? See, I think a lot of people think there's no way I can do this because I have kids. And that's where the question of this world schooling comes in, because I think this is fascinating. I've heard of this before. I don't think it's particularly common, but it sounds like you gave it a whirl. So I'd like for you to explain what that is to people.
Yes. Thank you. We knew, like, even before we had kids, again, my husband grew up in Europe. He has two passports. Our kids have two passports. So we always had this in to spend time in Europe. Having grew up in Germany, he has no interest in really living there again, especially and I lived there for 2 years. The winter can be kind of rough. But we said, let's take advantage of that at some point. And we know that's easier when kids are young and a little more adaptable. And we also prioritize language. So my husband speaks German to our kids from an early age. But we also knew that Spanish is a much more useful language. And so we said, let's land in Spain where they can learn Spanish and they're at a German school. And so learn more German. And also, you know, we had the in with just the visa wasn't even an issue because he has a passport. So it just all is like, let's take advantage of these opportunities while we can. So we moved there last year when my kids were like 3 and 5, and they started at school there in the first grade. And then
the
kindergarten, Sevilla, Spain.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so our first choice was Valencia, Spain, which is, I think, pretty well known. I had actually visited there before. It's beautiful. But the German school was like, we're totally full. Whereas the Sevilla one we interviewed with, like, we'll take you. So, and it's a beautiful city. And there's a lot to do there. Great weather year round. I mean, not in the summer, but we weren't there in the summer. So that was helpful. And so I guess world schooling can look like a lot of different things. For some families, it's moving much more frequently. They're homeschooling. There's a lot of hubs and communities for world schooling. So there's like Boundless Life is one where they have 3 month hubs in like 5 or 6 different locations around the world, like Portugal, Bali, Italy, Greece. So it's pretty easy to like show up and your kids can be at school for certain hours of the day. You can work. They have co-working, things like that. I connected with this woman who's been world schooling since 2018 with her 3 teenagers. She runs these world school pop-ups. So I actually hosted one in Sevilla this April. And we had 15 families show up for a week. So I put together 7 days of activities. The families were there. We did stuff together. It is amazing how these kids of all different ages, like day one, just show up and are playing together. The parents are chatting, very casual. And so each family pays like $150. And I got like a portion of that because I was the host. And then, of course, the lady who puts on all the infrastructure for this World School pop-up, she obviously makes her cut, which is important. So I'm going to host again next year in Sevilla and then next summer in Berlin. So that was really cool, but that's just 7 days. So that's something where, I mean, World School pop-up hubs, if anyone's listening, they have hubs in all six, well, not in America, but six continents next year. So it's really amazing.
Wow. Okay, you know I'm getting ready to geek out on her about something, right? Yeah, he knows. Yeah. Okay, Susie, Doug knows this about me. You just met me today, so you don't know this. So my husband and I plan to retire fully in 2028 and move to Spain.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yes, because I am obsessed with the country. Now, in my travels there, I've spent time in Madrid, Barcelona, Sevilla, Granada. Yes. But as a meteorologist, I also look at the weather because if I want to live there year round. So while we love Sevilla, I also know it's like 120 degrees sometimes in the summer. So
June
like,
to September is
right.
Rough.
So like I'm out. So it's got to be a coastal area, but also one that's not crazy touristy because obviously like a Barcelona is going to be more expensive. Yes. So I, since you're sitting here, have to ask you, what were some of your favorite places? Like if you saw yourself long-term living somewhere and maybe schooling wasn't an issue, what would be some of your top spots?
Yes, this is a great question, and I could talk forever. So Spain is lovely country. I definitely have not even seen all of it. There's so much to see there. I'm in a lot of like Facebook groups, met a lot of people. The non-lucrative visa is pretty easy to get if people are retired and head over there. And so there are definitely the hot spots along the ocean, along the coast, the southern coast, and then the big cities are going to be a little expensive. And it's been in the news, especially Barcelona, Madrid, some of this like, you know, housing, they've been affected by rising housing costs, and a lot of their pains have maybe been attributed to some of the Airbnb and different things. So I think a lot of the big cities are not super welcoming. Now, I mean, day in and day out, Spanish people are so kind, so welcoming, very into community, getting to know people. We were welcomed in so quickly, and I'm still in WhatsApp groups. It's just amazing. The community there is wonderful. But I always recommend, and this is something I'd really want to do next year, is kind of, I don't have a lot of blog ideas, is really highlighting kind of the four biggest cities. Sevilla is the fourth biggest. But once you go down from there, you get into these cities that maybe people haven't heard of, and they are so, can be so welcoming. I have some friends that are spending a year in like, I can't remember what town, but it's a small town. You've never heard of it. And there, she says every day, people are so welcoming, so happy to have them there. There are a lot of places that are really like kind of hurting with like decreasing populations because a lot of the jobs are in those cities. So there's a lot of cities that if you're not stuck to certain needs, aka like maybe an expat community, if you can learn the language and really assimilate to local community, there's a lot of like, pretty much if you look at the population, like the fifth to like 15th, biggest cities, I bet, are ones that are much more welcoming than like the top five. So also just kind of where you live. Like we actually didn't live because the school was a little bit on the eastern side of Sevilla. So, and I mean, within 20 minute bus ride, I could be in Centro. So super easy, or like a 20 minute bike ride. But yet we were basically where there's no like tourists necessarily. So I think that helps, is that like if you're there somewhere long term, you don't necessarily have to live right in the Centro. And don't get me wrong, I love being down there. It's always great when you are like right in the action. But at the same time, public transit is so easy. It's easy to get around, that, you know, you don't necessarily have to always live right kind of right where that is more expensive. And that helps, I think, considerably.
Well, we're going to have to totally exchange information because I'm going to have to pick your brain.
Yes.
Because this has just been a dream of ours for so long. I think we've covered this a little bit before, but I'm part-time. I'm thinking about firing in 2026, and I'm encouraging my husband to do the same in 2028. He's saying at the earliest, I'm saying at the latest, hopefully, you know, we'll see where we land. We have my husband's son, my stepson, is a sophomore in college. So we're kind of like, he might graduate in 27, if he might take longer. We just want to get him launched first.
Absolutely.
But we are... Yeah. I mean, we were just talking about it the other day. I'm like, oh my gosh, great weather every day. We'll be out walking every day. The cost of living is so much lower. Got to figure out if we want to be there full time or we want to kind of like split our time, which it sounds like, is that something you guys are considering?
Yes.
Moving forward?
And I think if you have that flexibility, I could be, I like a lot of different things. And you know, I think that there's a world where we could see ourselves staying in Spain long term. And I do know there are a lot of people who spend, you know, retirements there and are very happy. But I also, we have a lot of things in Colorado we like, lots of family here. So I think what we've landed on for next school year, like we came back this summer and we did fall here. My kids are finally both in elementary, which is amazing for all the parents out there stuck in like daycare cost land to finally reach elementary school where school's free, lunch is free, after school is free. It's like, whoa. So, but in that case, I also feel some flexibility that we can say, thank you very much. We'll be back next fall. But, and they're all excited for us. The teachers and the people we've known there for a while are fine with it. You know, it is what it is. They know this is a cool opportunity for my kids, but yeah. So right now we're landing on, we were here for the fall because we had some birthdays and we really want to be home for Christmas. And then we're going back in January and we'll be in Europe until like July timeframe. And our plan is to come back. I'd really like to, you know, we're got to be a little flexible when there's four of us to consider and they're all of our needs. But we're planning on kind of doing half and half for at least like another year or two. You know, I have a 5-year visa for me that's already over there. We are going right back to the same house we rented, the same school over there. So everything's kind of like pretty easy. We have talked about, though, that German schools are really limited to some of the bigger cities in Spain. And we would love to get out of some of those bigger cities, just like a little lower cost, like just kind of a little more of that Spanish community. And so if we went to like public school, it would allow us to live in pretty much any city in Spain. So yeah, we can definitely talk more about, you know, all the different things to consider there. I will say, though, it's not, I mean, the first month or two was, I mean, I've lived abroad. We've traveled a lot. It's a lot, though, to move.
Sure.
Move, especially a whole family. You know, we had a suitcase stolen on like day one because we were tired and, you know, just getting settled and land and the language barrier. Like I had very basic Spanish. My husband speaks a little more, which is helpful. And now I'm definitely in a better place. I took language classes like every day there for that year and I'm still doing a bunch. But I'm obviously it takes a while to learn any language. And so that can be, you know, kind of isolating for sure if you don't always feel like you can get to know people or talk in the community. And then there's just different ways of doing things. You know, I think what I found, Spanish people are really focused on like community. I mean, pretty much lunches last from 1 to like 5 p.m. on Sundays.
I love that.
It's like sitting around, it's talking, it's not, there's no rush. Kids are playing at the playground, parents are sitting at the table chatting. The WhatsApp groups for the families that we're at the school with is just amazing, like how much they support each other. I mean, I don't know like really any of the other families here in my kids' schools, but over there, like everyone knows everyone because you also don't like drop your kid off in your car. You like walk up with your kid. So you see everyone at pickup and drop off and the level of like community events, it's just amazing. So I think they really value family, community. It's just amazing. And not that we don't in the United States, I think.
We're not as good at it though, let's be real.
We're a little just so busy, you know? Yeah. And I've seen that I'm on the PTO at the school here. We put on a lot of events, but it does just take more effort to kind of get to know the people. Because I think we all have our own needs or desires, or we're just so busy working. I don't know. I haven't really figured it out. I look forward to, but it's really fun to live in a couple different worlds, to be honest. Like landing in Spain and, you know, I was only there for one school year. So it's not like I'm an expert, but being really open-minded to the way of living, getting to know different people and community. And even if I didn't always speak enough Spanish or they didn't speak enough English, like with some of the parents and stuff, so welcoming. And we were able to like somehow find ways to communicate. Being an international school, a lot of the other families, you know, had a parent that had lived elsewhere. I mean, they all speak like 4 languages if you grew up in Germany or other parts. So there was a lot of English speaking, which certainly helps a lot of people that want to practice their English. And just to highlight how, you know, so this has been a priority of ours is like having our kids exposed to language. One reason that we're at this point choosing to travel to like one location and stay put is that it gives them a chance to learn Spanish and German. But even in second grade over there, they start to learn English. So we would have these school events and the seniors, you know, their English is amazing and German. And of course they are Spanish, so they speak Spanish. And it's just so impressive. And that's something that I think, you know, I think we absolutely could do better in the U.S. is it's really not even just like for travel opportunities. It's just really good for your brain. And it's really just it's amazing to like see how other languages think about words and how they incorporate language. I don't know, just I think it's amazing. So, you know, sometimes parents like have, you have regrets about your own life and you then impose that on your children. I try not to, except for the language piece. I wish I had learned another language growing up. And so that's why I'm like, we got to do this for my my kids. So yes, we could dive more into this. For sure, I could talk forever about Spain. I mean, there's a lot of really great places to live in Europe. I think it's very approachable because you have the public transit. It's really easy to get around. Lots of different cultures and communities in a short distance. And flights are pretty affordable. You know, you got the time zone changes and different things to consider. But Europe is just so amazing. There's so much to do there.
How much cheaper is it to live there than here? Yes,
good question. So, yeah, so my kids are at a private school there, which is really, for the cost of two of them, is about the same as like one daycare here in the U.S. So that's why last year it was really easy to be there, because we would have been paying that no matter what, either here or over there. And then as far as housing, we could certainly have gone a little cheaper. We did find, it was on Airbnb. It's a house with a pool, and I would say it's about the same as what we pay to live here in Colorado. It's like 2,500 euros. That includes everything. It was furnished. And so, of course, we're paying a little bit of a premium because we weren't paying our utilities and things like that. And our landlord lived right next door. He was amazing. We'd have coffee. He let us stay at his beachfront property in Almanacar like a couple weekends. We spent Easter with him. It was just it's like here when we rent our house out, I wouldn't necessarily think to build that type of relationship. He was so welcoming. Like we have 8 boxes that he's storing right now for us over there. Again, we're going right back to the same property. And that's just so cool to know that like we get to, and his kids live in all different places and they had kids my age. So we would just be swimming in his pool. And so it's just really cool.
What are you getting for $2,500 a month? You said a pool. How many bedrooms? How many bathrooms? Yes. So what's included?
It was a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house. And it's like a duplex, because really like single family homes are certainly not common, especially in like the city of Sevilla. One of the reasons that cities in Europe are so easy to get around is they're just much more dense. Almost everyone lives in apartments. It is definitely unusual to have a garden. We had a garden and a little tiny pool. And he rents it out on Airbnb in the summer. Obviously, it does really well because it's very hot in Sevilla. So he was happy to have us there during the school year because he doesn't rent it out as much in the winter. So it just kind of is a win-win for him and a win-win for us because we weren't there in the summer. So and we had like a driveway space. And like I said, a little bit of a garden, and they took care of everything. So
utilities
it's very
were
easy.
Included too?
Yes. And the garden service, the pool service. So
air conditioning?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So 2,500 there. That's pretty good. Again, the school was about 1,000 euros. Food, because we ate out a lot more, but food at the grocery store was a lot cheaper. But even eating out as a family of four, we could do it for like maybe $40 to $50. Whereas here, I think that's like
no way.
Impossible. Yeah.
No way.
And just easy. The train, we would rent a car for like 40 euros for a week sometimes. We'd find those deals. We do like a subscription for 3 months where it's about 350 euros, maybe $380 for a month for car rental. And we didn't do that always, but it was fun to, you know, have a car for certain like weekend trips and things like that. So we did a lot of that in the winter. So I would say like could certainly move to Spain and spend less, but we were not, you know, going there just to save money. It was certainly a way to get to know, like a way to live there comfortably, I guess. And again, my husband was working, so he wanted to have a little bit of space. I have kids that aren't always quiet when they come home and he'd be working. So, you know, we could probably have lived in a smaller place if we were really like needing to. And we were able to rent our house out here that like covered all those costs. So It really was like kind of breaking even and all that. And then as far as travel, I mean, we did like a road trip to Portugal, and I did a lot of like with travel points to book the hotels and different things like that. Or because we were definitely off season, traveling a lot like in the January to March timeframe was like not the prime time to be traveling around Spain. But honestly, the weather was great. It was beautiful. Skiing there was about the same cost as Colorado, but it was still a fun experience. So yeah, I would say that there's certainly ways that people, you know, especially if they're not traveling with the family, could do it a lot cheaper. But at the same time, it was definitely more affordable than other countries in Europe. You know, having family that lives in Munich and Berlin and kind of hearing some of their costs, you know, it's definitely more expensive in other parts. But Spain has a great, you know, and I like to say that certainly privileged to be able to come there with like kind of a U.S. income and live very comfortably. But we saw that there's a lot of opportunities for local travel. And, you know, a lot of the families at this school were able to do even more trips than I. They were like going to Disneyland, Paris and things like that. And I really was just happy to enjoy our time in Spain. When we go back next year, we do have plans to go to Morocco over the spring break because honestly, it's a 1 hour flight. It was like $90 for each flight round trip from Sevilla. So it's a way to take advantage of kind of the proximity to different places while we're over there. And there's also, we're going to go to Valencia and do different things, but it's really easy to get around.
Yeah, the whole idea of geo-arbitrage, like taking your US dollars and going over there and kind of living like a king. Really excited. Like, I'm like the idea that you have a gardener. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have a gardener and a house cleaner, maybe a cook, maybe a pool boy. We'll see. Yeah.
And I think actually it would be easier if someone was moving there kind of full time and they became like, they became tax residents and were, you know, getting that. Like, we saw to pay for health insurance and different things. So we weren't really taking advantage of some of the things that if we became tax residents. But I mean, there's definitely higher taxes. So that does play a role. But I think you can get a lot for that if you're there long term. But we didn't meet those requirements.
I didn't mean to cut you off, fine. But I'm so glad you just mentioned healthcare because you have to have private healthcare if you're over there, right? And I think a lot of people assume, you know, our healthcare system is clearly broken. It's so crazy and the prices are ridiculous. And I think people assume it's kind of that way everywhere and it's not. So I'm so glad you brought that up because I want to know, what are you guys paying for private health care in Spain?
Yes, we did have to get that as part of our, like, the visa application for myself. And even though we also were carrying my insurance here in the US because we still needed that once we came back. So if we were just paying for one, again, if we move there kind of permanently, we would actually only have to pay for one. Or if we were residents and were eligible for the free system, obviously it would be beneficial. But we paid about 260 euros a month for a family of four.
Incredible.
Which is about $300. And that included pretty much everything.
Amazing.
Like, and I actually had some like neck pain, had some physical therapy. My son had strep. I would say that it's one of those things where you will not go broke or anything, right? I didn't necessarily need any like major medical care over there, but I felt like it was great. It worked out well. It was nice to have that. It's definitely, navigating a new system is not easy for sure. And like, it was helpful to have like a lawyer help with my visa and residency, and she helped us navigate that. Now I feel more comfortable. It's a learning curve anywhere you go, but it's a big one when it's a language barrier. So I highly recommend Adeslas, but almost everyone there that was living there, you know, was very happy with their care.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes finding the right place, and it's not fancy, but it also gets the job done. And it was easy. They're like, can you follow up tomorrow? And it was just really easy to get in for different things. So it felt nice to know that, like, you know, when you're moving abroad and you have a family, especially, that you're not, you know, people take care of, get their healthcare needs met there. Absolutely.
When I talk about retiring early, people are like, oh my God, but what about healthcare? What are you going to do? And I'm like, I'm going to move abroad because it's way cheaper and not even an issue over there like it is in that country.
Yeah.
Solves all my problems.
Yeah. And usually there's like a 12-month, you got to sign up for the full year, which is, again, one of the reasons to move over there kind of like long term and have that. And then they even cover a certain amount if you're out of the country. You know, like, we were in Germany and did utilize some healthcare, and then I actually never filed for it, but I just knew that if it was like major, we could. But we actually just paid out of pocket in Germany, and again, it wasn't terrible. So it's just amazing. We did have to pay out of pocket at first when we got to Spain for like a strep test and medications.
Right,
and
but how much was that? Exactly.
Yes. Exactly. At like an urgent care. Whereas here, I'm like, oh, I would be so scared to go to an urgent care without any coverage. So yeah, I think there's so much complexity to these conversations, and everyone's situation is unique. But it is really awesome to know that it's feasible to go to places. And of course, you are paying into that system. You are paying for it, but it just works pretty well.
All right, before we move on, we have a sponsor today, and that's GhostBed. So I have the luxe version. It's up in the guest room. You could test it out, Susie,
like,
if you want to. Yeah, it's like sleeping on a cloud.
Yes, that sounds great.
It's very cool. And we're going to focus on, because you do a lot of travel, so I want to focus on just like jet lag a little bit. So it sounds like you have traveled all over. How do you ramp up for jet lag?
That is a really good question. I was thinking about that just this morning, thinking, let's see, because I always have the time zone for Spain. And I'm like, as we get closer to flying back, I think we need to start adjusting. Because if you can even adjust like a couple hours locally towards that direction, it just helps on that end. And then, of course, don't plan any crazy plans the first couple days. Give yourself some time to sleep in. Again, the Spain lifestyle is like nothing really ramps up till mid-morning and like they're out till midnight. So it really actually kind of works well coming from the U.S. to Spain. Even though it's an 8-hour time zone, maybe it's like a 6-hour shift, if that makes sense, because of their later thing. And then getting a good night's rest.
Yeah.
having being able to sleep, maybe utilize a little Benadryl here and there.
Okay. And then when you're flying over, do you try to stay up? Do you sleep? Like, how do you treat that?
So I would say the benefit of going over with slightly older kids is we could put them on the tablet if needed, but we try to sleep on that overnight flight there for sure. And then that's going to throw you off though, because it's only like maybe 8-hour flight. You're maybe sleeping 4 hours of it. And so staying awake that first day over in Europe is really helpful. And then trying to get it on the schedule pretty quickly can be helpful. So it can be a challenge, though. That's why if you move there for long term, you're not really worried about it. You're like, okay, I'm going to plan on a couple days. But if you're going to Europe for like, I don't know, 7 days, I'm like, feel like
it's rough. Yeah,
it's rough.
Okay. And then do you take any supplements or any? You mentioned Benadryl just to help
some
you.
Some melatonin was also something I incorporated last time. And when we got back this July, so need to, it's always good to have some things on hand if needed.
Yeah. And it's been a while for me, but yeah, just stay up the whole next day. Like, I'll
get out
use a bunch of caffeine
hotel.
And then I'll crash hard and hopefully sleep for 10 or 12 hours or whatever. So, okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot to Ghost Bed. And they have a ton of different mattresses. Mm-hmm. So if you're not sure which one, you can take their sleep quiz. It takes about 3 minutes or so. It's a family-owned business with 20-plus years of experience, over 60,000 five-star reviews, and they have patented sleep and cooling technology. You can use the code MILEHIFI at checkout to get 50% off, or you could just go to ghostbed.com/MILEHIFI. So thanks to Ghostbed. All right. Spain, I'm so glad this worked out.
I did not know. I mean, I rolled in here today and I started looking at some of the notes he'd made, and it mentioned moving to Spain or living in Spain. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. So excited to talk to you about
it.
This
is awesome.
So any big surprises from what she said, Kristen,
no.
so far?
Okay. I mean, she just reinforced everything that I've already been kind of learning about for years from people and how amazing it is.
Now, when you've traveled over there, is there things that you found you really like about some of the cities you visited? Or are there things that you can see becoming like a larger challenge being there long term? Or what struck out to you in those?
Everything was just positive things. Like, oh my gosh, you walk everywhere. This is going to be so much healthier. Oh my goodness, the food is amazing. Everything is fresh. They don't put all the poisons in their food that we do here in this country. They don't, everything's not in boxes. And, you know, it's such a healthier lifestyle. And I keep hearing over and over again, I've read like international living magazines and things like that. People that go over there, they're not even trying. And all of a sudden, 3 months later, they've lost 30 pounds and they're able to go off some meds. And I love the idea of just walking everywhere and being ingrained in the community. I do think I will purposely choose a place where there's a good expat community because I think that'll make it a little easier to assimilate. But I absolutely plan to learn the language, make my husband do that too. I think that's really important. I think if there's going to be any changes, challenges, I'm not going to figure that out until I get over there.
Exactly.
But everything has just been, I'm not worried. I think it's going to be magical.
I think if people
be there tomorrow.
If you go into it with like an adventurous mindset and like, we're going to figure this out, we can get through all
of this.
That's
where I'm at.
You know, and it's amazing what we're capable of. But even I just look at my kids who are like, you know, okay, we're riding the bus today. Like they were pretty easygoing, even though, you know, I think we did ask a lot of them in a little bit in many ways. But it's like, I can see how flexible they just go with the flow. And I'm like, I can do that too.
I love the idea of not having to have a car and pay for car insurance and gas and taking public transit because they've got such a great public transit system there. And that's not really possible where we live, you know? And honestly, part of the reason I've chosen Spain is, okay, I'm such a nerd. I know it's okay. You can call me it. I get it. As a meteorologist, I started looking up where in the world can I get like Southern California weather without the Southern California price tag. And I started cross-referencing climate types around the world. And a lot of places in the Mediterranean came up. And I already knew I loved Spain, so then I just kind of honed in on that. That's why I'm not My husband loves Sevilla. It was his favorite mm-hmm. city we've ever it's been beautiful. To. But we're like 120 degrees in the summer. No, thank you. So that's why we're really focusing on the mm-hmm. coast. Mm-hmm. So weather's a big one. And just the mm-hmm. idea that we can be outside almost every day of the year, where we mm-hmm. live in the Midwest, that is just not the case. Like, I complain about the weather all the time. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's too windy. It's too buggy. It's too something. Mm-hmm. Right? But over there, oh my gosh, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. It makes such a difference to be able to be outside. Like, we'd pick them up around 4:30 or 6, depending on their after-school activities. But then there was this little playground. It was not fancy, but a couple kids would go there. We'd play outside another hour, go home, eat, go to bed. Every weekend, we were, like, outside doing something. And then also, I mean, I live in Denver, but it's still, like, 10 minutes to get to even, like, a yoga studio by, you know, driving. Whereas there, we weren't even, like, Centro, and I could walk to yoga. That was like 7 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And this is just that difference between here and there. Here, when I go to a yoga class, it's like drop in. Like, you go when you can. You maybe know the teacher's name, but you don't know anyone. But this was like, you pay by the month. It was a lot of the same people. I was soon WhatsApping with the instructor, because if he missed a class, he'd send us like a video to do. And I got to know everyone there. And it was obviously a good way to listen and learn to Spanish. But it's like, I could walk in 5 minutes to a yoga class. And it just fit in so much easier in my life. The Aldi, 2 grocery stores within walking, the coffee shop. Yes, the walking, my step, you know, whenever I track steps, it was like easily 10 to 15,000 there. And now back in the U.S., it's like, I've just struggled to get to like, enough.
And you have a much more sedentary yes. lifestyle. It's yeah. not good.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's definitely very much a cars are there, but it's not the only way to get around. Mm-hmm. You know, you just, it's just nice to have options is what I like. Whereas here it's a little more, it's harder to do anything besides like hop in the car to get wherever you need to go.
Are you working at all now? What's your situation
currently?
So
again, I just told my main job that I will be gone in the spring and they're like, okay. And they are, you know, I work intermittent, so I'm able to somewhat kind of help that someone just left. So I was covering for them. So really when I leave in January, it's not leaving them with a huge gap. And I have told her, like, if situations change, a lot of our work is like some federal funding, which may change next year. So you know, I said, if things need to change, I can be flexible there. But there's always something to do in healthcare, like I said. And then the reserves, I only work like 4 weeks a year.
So you are planning to go back to this thing after mm-hmm. when you come back?
So yes. Okay. Yes. And it's at the schools. So basically, I also don't work any of the school breaks. So, but there's always like someone leaving. And so I'm sure by springtime or summer, my boss can say, hey, here's some schools that we have available. Could you work? And so we have just some flexibility. I work as a health educator at the school-based health centers. So it's like, I think I'm honestly pretty cheap for them because, again, they don't pay any of my benefits or anything. So if I can fill in here and there, I think they've been really happy with that. And I've been with them for almost 9 years. So it helps to have that relationship with a organization where I've worked pretty solidly. And then like kind of like your situation, it's like they know you, they're happy mm-hmm. to keep you, have some flexibility there. And actually it kind of just allows them to, okay, if someone leaves, I can maybe cover a little bit more mm-hmm. or I can step back. I would really like to get into, just because there's so much finance podcasts, different things out there, obviously I consume a lot of that, and I would like to get more into that world, because I think there are people who, I see it in some of these world school groups, or people are like, oh, I want to live this lifestyle, I want to travel more with my kids, how do I make this happen? And again, there's just so much variety there. It doesn't have to be like go live in Europe for a year, but even if someone wanted to incorporate travel into their family, maybe being intentional with the way they budget for it or plan for it, or if it can start even a couple years before so that they can really take like a gap year at some point.
So what are you going to do? Are you going to start a podcast? Are you going to write a blog? What are we talking about here?
I've thought about all that things. I mean, certainly I don't have a ton of time, and maybe I have a little bit of shiny object syndrome, but this was being my first podcast. I was like, let's just see how this works. And so it could be podcasts, coaching, different things like that. I sort of started an Instagram. I have one post. I have like a website idea. I really want to dive more into this once we're in Spain, where I'm not working 3 days a week even. I'm just taking like language, and I'm there for my kids when they need me outside of school. And then I really want to dive more into this thing. So I do see people can do like, and again, I wouldn't want to even charge a ton. Maybe that's not the great business plan, but just something where I could be, you know, help people as they navigate choices around taking time off, gap year planning. There's like a whole world of kind of preparing for that would be great to help families with.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of people doing that.
That's, I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
Especially on the family side, yeah. Right? Like,
well, yeah. You know what?
Since I don't have kids, I don't consume any of that content. My assumption is out there, but I just don't know.
I just don't know of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like I said, we were not going to be able to get to nearly hardly
I'm
anything.
I'm so talkative, and I really appreciate being able to hear from you guys too about.
It's awesome to have Kristen here helping out, and you led into each question that I was going to ask anyway. Okay. So I hardly had to talk, which was is fantastic. That? Yeah, I love this model.
Does that make my paycheck bigger?
Yeah. We can triple it. We can triple it now. Yeah. So as we're wrapping up here, we're going to go grab some lunch. So Susie, you said you have an Instagram. Where should people find you if they want to connect with you?
I did Your Family Money. It's just a name that came to my head. Long time ago, before I even land on your podcast, I was like, ooh, Colorado Fi would be cool because I think the Colorado lifestyle kind of embodies a little bit more of this like Coast Fi, enjoy as you go type thing. But then I found my Hi-Fi. I was like, oh, they kind of took that, but it's been great. I've appreciated listening to your podcast for so long. But I have I'll work on maybe expanding on that a little bit. But really, I'd love to reach out to anyone that's curious about world schooling, creating a family gap year, wanting to connect with other resources and people in this community, because I've kind of got to know a lot of the people that are doing this. And then, of course, if anyone wants to talk about Spain, I could talk about all day long, or parts of Europe to travel to, or just in general, what great travel opportunities I'd love to chat more about. So I can, leave an email address too.
Cool. Yeah, we'll link it up so people can get to your Instagram profile, email address, however you want to do it. So people should check the show notes. And before we wrap, so Kristen, thanks a lot for joining me. It's great to have you in the studio.
I know, so fun.
So what's going on with you? What are you working on right now? And this episode probably won't come out until like late January or early February to give you a heads up on that.
Well, one of the things that I started in my new part-timedness, and we've talked a little bit about this before, is Five Friends Travel, because I am so passionate about travel, which kind of came out today, obviously, but I also really love to plan travel. Mm-hmm. And like my favorite things in the world are, well, obviously my family, but outside of that, travel, planning travel, and hanging out with five people, right? So I was like, why don't I just combine these things? So I've created a way for the Fi community to travel together to see the world. It's called FiFriendsTravel.com. We've got a trip that's going to Portugal in April. We're going to Morocco in October. And then we have a Christmas cruise to the Christmas markets that's going to go from Vienna to Nuremberg next December. And it's all there on that site. You can also send me an email through that site. I'm already thinking of some ideas for 2026. I've got my eyes on an African safari. So we'll see where it goes. Right now I've got 10 people going with me to Portugal in the spring. I'm very excited about that. And we'll see. I'm super stoked. Like everybody just keeps saying, this is just so perfect for you. And it just kind of came together very organically. And I don't know that I could really do anything more perfect because it's combining all of my loves. Mm-hmm. Okay, when are you coming? When are you going to join us?
soon. Yeah. We've looked at a couple of them, but for whatever reasons, it's not working out. We love our dog so much, we can't leave her. By the way, she's upstairs. So remember the rules, no petting. Yeah, no.
Got it.
So, Kristen, we'll link up so people can get to it, and they should sign up for the email list, right? That keeps them informed.
Yeah, so on the very front page, you scroll down to the bottom and you just subscribe, and then that way you'll get my newsletter that I send out. I don't try not to spam people too much, 2 or 3 times a month, just kind of updating you on what's available. You will be the first to know about any new trips that are launched. So just shoot me your email, put you on my distribution list, and you'll hear from me every few weeks.
All right. Perfect. Well, thanks, Susie. Thanks, Kristen. Great having you in the studio today, and we'll link up all the stuff that we just talked about so people can get to it. So thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Fi podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review.
We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. Right. Susie, you said you were sort of a native to the area. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Loveland, Colorado. My parents moved there soon before I was born, from like New York and Wisconsin and such. But, you know, that's all I knew growing up was small town, northern Colorado. And I really liked, obviously, the access to nature, outdoors. I feel very lucky to have grown up in Colorado. There's lots to do, it's just a really fun town, you know, easy to get around. We were up in Estes a lot, YMCA we would go every year if anyone's been there. It's a great place to spend some time up in the mountains. So, yeah, Loveland's a great place. It has grown a lot, though, a lot of these.
There's so much stuff. There's so many people around. Yes. And then, Kristen, have you been to this area before?
I have not. I had never even flown, into Denver before, just through. So I haven't explored any of the area at all.
You have a lot to see.
I guess. I don't know how much I'm going to get in on this trip, but it's just a quick little Monday through Friday.
Okay.
I've been hearing about, Longmont Five Peeps for the longest, and I'm like, man, I got to get there. So Carl and Mindy have been so gracious to let me stay in their rental, their Airbnb.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So hanging out there for a few days and looking forward to meeting a lot of the people in the area, actually. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You came at a good time because there's snow in the mountains, but there's not snow down here, so that's kind of nice.
I planned it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I do that weather stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So you knew exactly.
Perfect.
And then, and the mountains looked awesome today. I don't know, did you go out?
So pretty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's.
Well, just driving here to your house, it was a beautiful view of the mountains, the snow-capped peaks, gorgeous.
It's amazing. Had you spent any time in other big mountains or anything like that?
Yes. So in the last 5 years or so, my husband and I, every summer, we would pick a different cool mountain town to go explore.
Okay.
So Jackson Hole, Whitefish, Montana, Park City. We just explored some different places. This is just one we haven't gotten to.
Perfect. Well, I hope you keep coming back out here.
I saw you had a guest room.
Yeah, there is. There's a room. It has its own bathroom. Yeah, it's pretty nice in there.